Blog Talk Radio.
There is a place we'll go where there is mostly quiet, flowers and butterflies, a rainbow lives beside it, and from a velvet sky, summer stars.
That's one of my favorites. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and yes, you're at the right place at the right time, where week in and week out, we bring you news and information that's, well, gathered from around the world. And tonight, this evening, we have another very special program for you. And I'm thrilled to bring it to you. So before we go into that, as I always like to do, I am going to encourage you to get on the mail list. And that way you'll know who's coming down the pipeline, so to speak. And to get on the mail list, it's quite simple. You'll just simply send me an email to daryl_cla18@msn.com. Again, to get on the mail list, you'll just simply send me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, _cla18@msn.com. And as I said, I am truly, truly excited this evening about our program because, well, our guests, and we have a couple, are near and dear to me. They speak truth to power. There's a lot that we have in common. Now, it's not to say that we agree 100% on everything, but heck, I don't agree 100% with my wife. And we've been married years. But I do have ultimate respect for these individuals. They're grounded, rooted, they're fact-based. And they do what my program intends to do for my listeners, and that is to encourage, to inspire, to enlighten, to empower, to educate you on the things that you should be at least cognizant of. So I'm not going to spend much time speaking on their accolades. You'll have opportunities to do that by going to their websites, but I'll just mention a little about our guest, our first guest this evening. As I said, that I'm truly thrilled to have be able to join us, and we only have him for a short time. So again, not to belabor this, our first guest is Mr. Glenn Ford. Now, Mr. Glenn Ford's been in this business a bit longer than me. I have followed Glenn for many, many, many years in terms of his journalistic prowl. He's been in radio for over 35 years and TV and print media as well. So his candid, no-holds-barred approach, I would say, is respected and recognized nationwide. You don't have to always agree with Mr. Ford, but you have to at least take note. And so this evening, Mr. Ford is going to provide his insightful perspective on what's happening politically in America as we face leadership under a new president within a matter of hours. He's going to talk about the implications of where it may take us and what perhaps some of our alternatives might be in this venture. So as I said, you don't have to agree. There are those that may have disdain. I know there are many that have applause for his candid voice. But no one can say Mr. Glenn Ford sits on the fence. So without further ado, Mr. Ford, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Well, as always, it's a pleasure, and I want to just mention to our listeners that if they aren't aware, and most, at least many of our listeners are, of the website blackagendareport.com. There's no spaces. Blackagendareport.com is where they can get candid journalistic information. And from there, I would like to hand this mic over to you. And we've been at this, you know, I was looking at some of my files. Glenn, we've been, you know, on the air together for about 8 years. It's been a while. And I know you've been at this much longer. So can you, we're going into a new leadership, so to speak, if I can use that word. Can you talk a little bit about Black Agenda Report and then give us some insight from your perspective of this this venture that we're about to all take.
Well, Black Agenda Report has been a weekly journal of the Black Left. We're providing news and analysis and commentary for 10 years now. Before that, the crew, the same core of writers, was at the Black Commentator, which I also co-founded, and that began in 2002. It's interesting, the first issue of the Black Commentator in April of 2002 focused on a politician who was not even an entity on the national scene, but was soon to be, Cory Booker, who had just declared his candidacy for mayor of Newark the first time. This was his 2002 unsuccessful race for mayor. The top story in the first issue of the Black Commentator was essentially an expose of just how right-wing Cory Booker was, and explained all of his connections to the corporate right, to a whole constellation of organizations that were essentially right-wing Republican organizations. The fact that he ran two private schools and was an advocate of private school vouchers, that is, giving public money to private schools, and he remains that. And so we've republished or put links on the site on Black Agenda Report to that first story in the first issue of its predecessor, the Black Commentator, because folks are now talking about Cory Booker being a possibility for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2020. To use shorthand political speech, that he might be the new Obama. Well, he's even more right-wing than Obama, and Obama was no liberal.
Well, that's a good place to segue into your perspective of what's happening. And before I take that perspective, if you would, from you, from where we're going, I'd like to bridge from where we're coming from. And I'm saying that because, and listeners, I'm going to keep repeating this theme throughout. You really need to go to blackagendareport.com. I mean, you whether you agree or not, you need to broaden your perspective if you haven't been there and don't have that perspective. And so I'm referring to your one of your editors' article on what happened recently with John Lewis and perspective of John Lewis, who is considered a hero by, you know, by many perspectives. Can you speak to that? Because there's a lot of back and forth from mainstream about how it was a disrespectful dialogue between the incoming president and John Lewis. What is your perspective and your network's perspective of that? And John Lewis.
You know, it's very. I can have present a critique of John Lewis, and I would rather do it outside of the context of Donald Trump, because if you critique John Lewis or anybody within the context of Donald Trump, then you appear. Folks want to make it as if you are defending Donald Trump, and you know, I don't think it's necessary to be in that position. So forget about Trump. I'll just talk about John Lewis. And John Lewis, who's served 14 terms in Congress, cloaks himself in the mantle of Dr. Martin Luther King. In fact, in Atlanta, people rather derisively call him the Lord, to make funny, that is, in, as in the Lord, to make funny of his self-righteous arrogance. But John Lewis is not a politician of peace. John Lewis votes consistently for wars, not just Democratic wars, but for Republican wars at all. He is a straight down the line, what they call centrist Democrat. And to be called a centrist Democrat, that means that you make noises of protest when social programs are threatened, but you go along with U.S. imperialism and a war machine that kills millions, literally millions of people. And John Lewis, who styles himself as the second coming of Martin Luther King, is a supporter of imperialism. So, no, I don't think of John Lewis as being a hero. A hero does not support wars that are unprovoked and violate international law and result in the deaths of, say, 500,000 people in Syria, 50,000 in Libya countries. And we could go on for the rest of the half hour describing what the U.S. Has wrought in foreign policy. And those crimes are forgiven by folks like John Lewis and folks like Keith Ellison, who's now trying to become the head of the Democratic National Committee. And he is touted as being a leading progressive. But Keith Ellison, along with John Lewis in 2011, voted against a bill that would have stopped, called a halt to the bombing of Libya, and would another bill, a companion measure with it, that would have forced President Obama to comply with the War Powers Act and state to the Congress why he had committed the U.S. military in Libya, as the law required. And how in the world can one describe Keith Ellison, who backed the bombing of Libya, and it was an unprovoked attack, and then enthusiastically backed the assault on Syria, which has resulted in 500,000 people dead and half of the country's entire population being displaced, and the United States being in the position and now exposed as having trained and armed and directed and transported these Islamic jihadists, including al-Qaeda, which went by the name of the al-Nusra Front. How can one describe anyone who supports those kinds of policies as progressive or as being representative of black public opinion? They are representative of black public opinion, despite the fact that the first black president in his 8 years in office has waged war against seven nations. I believe it is still true that black America is the most anti-war constituency in the United States, as polls have shown ever since they've been polling black folks.
Wow. You know, with that said, I've got to segue over into, again, that legacy or so-called legacy that so many are applauding in our president. So with that said, I think you, from what I know, and I have a perspective similar to at least some degree, the fruit didn't fall far from the tree in terms of those under the Obama legacy. What is your perspective of that legacy, if you will, and Barack
President
Obama?
Well, I think I've said enough about his foreign policy. He's a warmonger and a war criminal. But then all U.S. presidents since World War II have been war criminals and have ignored the rule of law. President Obama does this methodically under the Obama doctrine of humanitarian military intervention, which is a recent invention that does not recognize the sovereignty of other countries. the sovereignty of countries, the inviolability of borders, the rules against crossing somebody's border, and you have no business in somebody else's country. That's the basis of international law. And once you get rid of that, you have no law internationally. And Obama has waged war against that. But let's get off foreign policy. Most folks, when they talk about Obama's legacy, they want to talk about domestic policy. So let me say this. President Obama came into office with the purpose of forging a grand bargain of austerity with the Republicans. He was so intent on it that he announced to the editorial boards of the Washington Post and the New York Times in the 2 weeks before he was even sworn into office in 2009. He told those editorial boards that under his administration, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and all entitlements would be on the table for cutting. He set the stage for a grand bargain of austerity with the Republicans. Nobody forced him into it. The Republican Party was on its back after its landslide, the landslide defeat of McCain by Obama in 2008. They couldn't threaten or bludgeon or pressure him into doing anything. Newspapers were writing obituaries about the Republican Party. Where is it going to go? What was its future? And Obama controlled both houses of Congress. He basically had a mandate to do whatever he wanted to do, but he announced what he planned to do, and that was to cut social programs, including the inviolable Social Security. Now, that explains everything about his behavior during the next eight years. As he tried to come up with cuts to the budget, cutting programs that all progressives hold dear, and convince the Republicans to shake hands on a deal. He compiled a list of $4 trillion in cuts. I believe it was that was in 2010, which is the same number that the Republicans had come up with, and mostly the same programs, and offered those cuts to the Republicans on a silver platter so that they could shake hands and consummate the grand bargain that he had come into office trying to arrange. And because the Republicans are so racist, are so intent on defeating the Democrats rather than collaborating with them, they were unable to accept the perfect deal, a deal that one black congressman called a Satan sandwich. He said President Obama is trying to make us eat a Satan sandwich, but they were prepared to eat it, but the Republicans weren't. And that's when the relations between the two parties in Congress fell into deadlock and remained there until the present time. But it's not because President Obama was not trying to come up with a formula that was as close to Republican policy as any recent any Democrat in recent history has attempted to get. He was not just Republican light in his actual policies, he was indistinguishable from them.
Glenn, just to bring some other perspective in, what do you say to those who say that, and I'll mention a few things for you to address, and especially from a black perspective, I'm mentioning these things. Well, it was good for our youth to see a black man in power. I'm going to mention a few things. See a black man at the head of this country, speaking intelligently and telling white folk what to do. And by some records, and I know records can be manipulated, but it's been said some records, the population of the prisons have decreased. And I'm not saying by what gender or age or anything of that nature or race. And by some standards, more have entered colleges. And again, I'm not speaking in terms of race or age or anything of that nature, just generally speaking. So there are those that would claim, and as you know, especially from a black, because I think he was given a pass, especially the second time. The first time, I can kind of see, because as you said, he had both houses and people had high, high hopes. But the second time, I believe he really was given just a complete pass. And so what do you say to those individuals that would speak those kinds of accolades? And they're all over the place, of course. They're protesting in D.C., not just because of who's coming in, but because of the sorrow for not getting, you know, the choice that many people know Barack wanted, which was Clinton. So that's a lot, but I'm going to toss it in your lap.
Just to directly address those two areas that you mentioned, mass incarceration rates had been going down before Obama came into office. Graduation rates, including graduation rates for black students, had been going up before Obama came into office as well. If we're talking about this feel-good stuff, dope feels good too. But you can't make a life high on dope. Certainly, folk who have been oppressed as we have in this country have and continue to have a psychological need to see ourselves in control, being in full possession of our own agency, of being full human beings, and that means that some of us are bosses. All of us, that makes us feel good, and it is essential for people to feel good. But if that's all that you're demanding from your leadership is that they act like a human being and as if they have agency and do not embarrass you in some dramatic way when they occupy positions of power, well, then you don't have you're not making demands at all on your leadership, and you'll get nowhere except sitting on that feeling good, just like you were smoking some dope. And in fact, we have acted like folks who were on dope for 8 years, and I'm talking about politically. We at Black Agenda Report anticipated, and we wrote about it way before Inauguration Day in 2009. We predicted that the age of Obama would lead to a further neutralizing of black folks as a political force in the country. That is, that the traditional black leadership, which we call the Black Myth Leadership Class, would become even more slavish and ineffective than previously, because they wouldn't want to do anything, say anything, make anything that sounded remotely like a demand that might somehow embarrass the new president. You're going to treat this Obama like some kind of precious and fragile jewel, so that if you breathe something that smacks of a critique, much less a demand, he might shatter, and then folks wouldn't have their dope anymore. Well, for now, not because of anything that black folks did, he's on the way out. And, yeah, I'll be real frank. I'm glad to see the back of him. And I hope that means, well, I know that it means that the dope has been taken away, and we can start approaching politics. That is dealing with our own situation as it really is, as sane and sober, serious people, and not people trying to protect an icon and keep that feel-good thing going.
So Barack may have been a sheep in wolf's clothing from some extent. Dope without it being labeled dope. I'm hearing, and I've made a similar statement. In fact, I opened up, you know, I always open up with a bumper tune with an old Diana Ross, Be a Lion. I think it was from The Wiz. And maybe this will help us to then being faced with overt versus covert situation, face ourselves and stand up and be who we are, and find out if we don't know who we are, because it's I believe
our obligation, my brother, is to fight the power. But when we identify with the power, and even worse, as with Obama, want to protect the power, well, then we can't fight the power. And our condition cannot change. We cannot progress unless we fight the power.
You talk in your program website, blackagendareport.com, which, again, for those I'm seeing people popping in numbers, we're talking with Mr. Glenn Ford, executive editor of Black Agenda Report, blackagendareport.com. And we're having a constructive dialogue about this. And so with that said, for our new listeners, you mention on the site ever smaller circle of billionaires. Would you speak to that? And you talk about how can that related that to America in terms of a civilized society. And I may be getting some of the words mixed, but it was a very intriguing article.
Yeah, and we only have a couple of minutes before I have to leave, but that was based on an Oxfam organization report, which found last year that 62 very, very rich men control as much wealth in the world as half of the world's population, the half at the bottom. That is, 62 men controlled as much wealth as 3.6 billion of the world's people. Well, this year, Oxfam came out with another report, and this year it's down to 8 men, 8 of the super rich, controlling as much wealth as half the world's population, 3.6 billion. The United States leads the world in billionaires. It has more than 500 of them. China's second has a little more than half of that, 200 and something. Russia is way down number 6 on the list with 77. You know, and I think that we should judge the level of civilization of nations not by a positive scale in terms of their numbers of billionaires, but by a negative scale. The mere existence of billionaires is the evidence of massive, methodical, obscene, barbaric accumulation of wealth through theft. That is, all wealth is the product at in the end of people's labor. And so when you have 8 men with as much wealth as half of the world's population, we have to picture them as having the labor, the fruits of life of half the world's population in their pockets. And that means that these are super predators, super criminals, with the goods on them and flaunting it. And any society that produces these kinds of criminals in large numbers and praises them and elects them president is not a civilized society.
All right. Well, I know that you had a prior engagement. I thank you to take the time out with us, Glenn. I have a few more questions because, you know, we can talk so often, but I just want our listeners to be able to hear. Perhaps if you'll join us next month in month of February, I'd appreciate that because I want to give the listeners a chance to have dialogue because there's so many that wanted to speak with you and even called when they found out you were going to be on the air. You know you have a following with my listenership. But I always tell them they can hear you direct, and if you can tell them yourself how they can tune into your programming and information.
All right. Well, thanks for the opportunity, brother.
All right. So we've been talking with Mr. Glenn Ford. He's got to run, and basically I'll let the listeners know that you can tune in to Glenn Ford and get other means of listening to him on his weekly radio program at blackagendareport.com. As you can see, Mr. Ford does not mince words, and he speaks truth to power, and he speaks with a factual backdrop. So it's not personal. It just is what it is. And so we thank whenever we can have Glenn Ford to come on and give a perspective that many either are fearful or just don't have the knowledge to bring forward. Glenn Ford, brother, thank you. I'll be reaching out because I really want to continue this because I want to talk about this new regime that's coming in and your perspective on that, which you've already given us a glimpse of course. Thank you again, Glenn.
Well, thank you.
All right. So if that didn't get you warmed up, I don't know what will. But now that you're warmed up, we're not going to stop. We have, following Mr. Glenn Ford, one of our own regular guests who brings, again, truth to power. And an enlightenment through his journalistic repertoire of research and his historic acumen. And so I'm pleased to say we have with us this evening Mr. Ron Crenshaw. And I encourage anyone and everyone in the listening audience to call in, and the number is 347-838-9142. On your listening dial, you'll just simply press 1 if you'd like to, you know, have a comment, and I'd love to have it. We don't have to always agree, but let's not be disagreeable. We need to have a common discourse where we can at least communicate and have communication about the current state of affairs. If we can't do that, well, let's cash in the chips. No sense being in the game because it's about the game. It's really not about the players, as they say. Don't hate the players, hate the game. So I encourage you to call in, give us your opinion, whether you agree or disagree. You may have something that truly will enlighten the rest of us, including and notwithstanding myself, that we hadn't thought about. So, you know, some of our most brilliant thinkers and speakers on Progressive News Weekly come from what some would call the grassroots, and that's you. So the number is 347-838-9142. I'd love to hear your comments. And in the meantime, we're going to bring to the airwaves Mr. Ronald Crenshaw. And Mr. Ronald Crenshaw, as I said, is a historian, activist for human and equal rights, a research analyst. And, well, his no-holds-barred, again, approach is one that's applauded by many and disdained by others. Again, one thing that cannot be said about Mr. Ronald Crenshaw is he doesn't sit on the fence. And another thing that you'd have to say about Ronald Crenshaw is he's fact-based. He's going to give you a resource for anything that he has found and is stating. And so keep in mind what we're saying about this current administration. And it's not to say that I agree 100% with everything that Mr. Ford has said, or everything that Mr. Crenshaw has said. But I do believe that these individuals should have an opportunity to express a view that's at least, I believe, reasonable, especially with them being fact-based. And I've done the vetting on both Glenn over the years, and as I said, he's been on my show off and on. So I have those who are very, what they would call truly left, like a Glenn Ford, and I've had those who are somewhat centrist left, and I would consider those to be, and I've been there, because I supported Barack Obama wholeheartedly. His first term, I was out campaigning heartily for Barack Obama, and anyone that knows me knows that. But that centrist left, I call it, is of that patch, the mainstream left. But as a Glenn Ford considers himself a left, you know, I try not to use those terms. However, it's descriptive in the society we live in. Left, right, left being conservative, right being, left being liberal-minded, whatever that means, and right being conservative. I never liked that. And since I've spoken in the area of politics and society, I've always said there is no left, there is no right. It's one bird. It's not a wing to the left or a wing to the right. Left wing, right wing. There's one bird. It has two wings. And those wings are connected in a centrist fashion. And as our next guest, Mr. Ronald Crenshaw, will, I'm sure, articulate, that central common point of that left wing and right wing is called capitalism. And so with that, I bring you Mr. Ronald Crenshaw to the airwaves of Progressive News Weekly. Welcome, Mr. Crenshaw, to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. And the words you've just said are on the money. And I appreciate also the presentation that Mr. Glenn Ford gave. That was a lot of facts he laid out there that were true, and he's right on the money. I've never had a dispute with him on what he reveals. It's right there, and we can see, as he was telling us, Obama was trying to share things with the Republicans. So that in and of itself shows what's going on, that it's one party. And it's, they're the capitalist party. And, you know, with their getting together and not allowing a third party to come in with the debates, I mean, that was kind of, infantile. I mean, you can let people in the debates and you still don't count their votes when they get votes, you know, because all this stuff is controlled by the one-party system. You see, when people realize it's a one-party system, things will change in the sense of their grasp of what they're living in. Because, you know, it just, you know, takes time for people to catch on. Because there's things that have been put out there that have brainwashed people, you know, and on and on. So Trump, I guess, is the result of that, what they call the Tea Party. People who, you know, have been grasping for that, but he goes a little far, and I think he steps in his own bad stuff when he says he's going to bring the jobs back. You know, I mean, he's not analyzing why they left, and they're not coming back unless they can get lower wages than where they are. You see, so if they can get lower wages where they are, yes, they'll come back. But what will that do for the country? Because the country is based on a certain level of wealth. already. Mm-hmm. So coming back is not even in the game. So there's going to have to be some kind of divergent. Take people's mind off of that and get them into something else. And the most likely thing is keeping them preoccupied with wars, unfortunately, because that war stuff is getting to the point, from my view, getting to the point where we're going to start annihilating ourselves. It's nuclear bombs, that's what that means, annihilating each other. So we've got a big thing there. But anyway, on about Trump. We shall see what he will do. And he's talking now not about building that wall, but keeping people out in other ways, you see. So that's crumbling. And he's just had two corporations that have decided to leave the country while he's busy saying he's going to bring the jobs back. Two corporations, and he runs down for the one that was going into Mexico to offer them something like $7 million to stay and all that kind of stuff. And they said, "Oh, we don't need that. We got our goose with the golden egg." So you know, it's being displayed right in front of people's eyes if they want to see it, because right now, you know, he's. He's got everybody uplifted and all that kind of stuff that goes for him. I mean, there are a lot of people, you know, picketing him and stuff of that sort. But they're picketing him and not the system itself, because he's that product of the system, you see, else he wouldn't be this far advanced. He is the product of that, of this system. And as Glenn Ford have already said, that's capitalism. And capitalism demands that you constantly are accumulating wealth. You can't stop. You have to keep accumulating. And as he referred to the dope, the drugs, well, that's another drug for the system. The drug for the system is always to make profit. Keep it going. Because if you don't, you can lose it. So that's the quagmire we're in. And it's not healthy for that kind of stuff to just keep going. But we will see what he can bring back and how wages will go up. Those are the critical areas. Who he can bring back, because I don't see that happening. But I don't have telepathic vision or anything like that.
You don't have a crystal ball, Ron?
Yes.
No crystal balls, huh?
No, I have no crystal ball, but I do know that they left because of cheaper wages in foreign countries. And that
Ron,
means
who
to
are
come
the two-
back, they have to get less than they are making where they are.
Who are the two countries, if you can share that?
Huh?
So, I mean, the two companies, I mean.
The two countries? Well, one, of course, is China.
Companies.
Companies that have left.
Yes.
Oh, the steel industry left years ago. Right now, it's been the automotive. So that's been GM, Ford. Ford has some more stuff here than GM. GM is big time out of here. Then, of course, Chrysler, of course, has been sold to Italy, Italy or Spain. It's one of those countries. I think it's Italy, though. I can't think of the name of the company. It escapes me right now. But, of course, Chrysler's gone. And, you know, they still have some factories here, but by and large, they're under their ownership of this European country. I can't think of it for the life of me. It's right on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, probably next week I'll have it, and I'll just blurt it out when I do.
Isn't it fiat?
Are you there? Fiat.
Isn't it fiat?
Fiat, that's it. Fiat, right. That's who's bought them out. But then, you know, in turns, they will probably take their industry into one of the Asian countries, because there's more than one. You know, there's Malaysia, there's South Korea, then there's
China.
Eastern European countries that a lot of the U.S. stuff has gone into also. So,
well, let's not
so all of these are lower wage areas, and that's where capitalism takes them. So the country here is really starting to get unstable. We're in a point where it's getting it's unraveling slowly, but it's unraveling. And I think that's why they wanted Trump to come in and see if he could pull things together. And I don't see how, because the feller is not, you know, he doesn't seem to have the flair or the smoothness of a Clinton. And he's, you know, he's very emotional, like he gets back at people, you know, his thin skin. The actress was criticizing him, and he came back with Meryl Streep. He was making fun of a fellow that couldn't talk well, you know, and he was making fun of him, and she said it hurt her that he would do such a thing. And he came back saying that she was a high overrated actress. That was his thing. She was an overrated actress. So, I mean, you know, and he says that, but without giving any rationale for saying it. Well, what are you basing it on? He doesn't do that, you see. So whatever, like what he came back with John, the congressman, he just said all talk and no action, you know, and take care of your neighborhood. It's full of crime, black crime and all that kind of stuff. And he doesn't see any white crime. White crime is all over the place, you see, but he talks to that because that makes him sound, you know, like he knows more about things than everybody else does. And, you know, it's just that he's a thin-skinned person. And, well, for me, he's a scoundrel because of all the things he's done in the past. And, you know, he talked about Mexicans. He talks about Middle Eastern people, Muslims, and all that kind of thing. When capitalism is not based on religion, it's based on taking what it wants. That's what it does. It takes what it wants. It's got the power to do so. It does so. Because there was no reason to invade Libya. And the same with Afghanistan and Iraq. But, you know, hey, I got to have the ownership of all this stuff. And this Asian thing has really been put out in front through this book called The Grand Chessboard by Zbigniew Brzezinski. He lays that out in The Grand Chessboard that the United States now must complete and take over and encircle Russia and China. Those are the two guys they have to encircle so that they can take the world. And this is his, you know, this is his vision. And, you know, it's not coming. It's not coming because he wanted to get the, you know, he wanted to get the route for Afghanistan. He wanted to go into, the Caspian Sea, Azerbaijan. There's a rich oil and gas finding there. So he wanted to go through Afghanistan, and he couldn't because they've stopped him, you see. And of course, it was easier for him to attack Iraq because they had no air force, you see. So he could do that, 1, 2, 3. But, I mean, all these things, murdering people to stay on top, and most important, to be great. That is utterly savage. I can't think of anything by murdering people to make you great. Do you hear me? I mean, am I resonating with someone? I mean, you're going to be great because you can murder people? Oh, that's insane.
Yes, well, that's that imperialistic
right
component,
right,
that Glenn Fort was referring to. And
exactly.
You don't hear much about that international flavor of the previous administration. And
right.
I'll even say administrations on the Democratic side, they have been getting a pass. I mean, what they did, as you said, to Libya and Syria and many of the other foreign
right.
countries is an atrocity, in my opinion. You have to do the research, listeners, and I encourage you to call in so that we can have a common dialogue about this. Because it's not to say that we're right, or not that I agree with everything you're saying, but what you're saying now I resonate with, Ronald. If you do the reading, I want someone to call in that's done some research and give another perspective. And I'm not saying I want that just to have some good radio ratings, which it makes for good radio ratings, but I want that so that we can all come together and as I said, have a common a dialogue about what's going on so that we can collectively move forward, because this is a country for the people, by the people, and of the people. And it's not to say that any one person is 100% right. What I'm hearing now is making sense. I've done the homework. I'm sure there's more I can do, and I'm willing to do that. But I've not seen or heard anything counter to the facts that I'm finding. Ron, what's your take on first of all, the grand chessboard? I know someone wants to know who the author was of that.
Right. Okay.
Who is that author, the grand chessboard?
That's Sobrizhnev Brzezinski. I will give you the spelling because, of course, it's not English. He's Polish. So just bear with me a second here, and I'll get the author spelling correct.
While you're doing that, if I can just put
I have
there.
It.
Oh,
I
go
have
ahead.
It. Okay. Z as in zebra. B as in boy. I as in Ider. G as in George. N as in nation. I as in Ida. E as in Edward. W as in winter. That's the first name. Second,
how do you
name.
Pronounce that?
Sobrizhnev.
You said it ended in W.
Yeah, it ends with W.
And yet it's pronounced Zbriv.
Right.
Sobrizhnev.
Right.
Nev.
See,
and Z?
It's Polish.
And the W is pronounced as a V.
I would assume so.
Okay, that's good. We're not going to do our grammar class this evening,
okay. Listeners.
Well,
that's the way
maybe
it's spelled. I'm giving you the way it's spelled. Right.
Give
off
us the last name.
Off the printed PC here.
All right, what's the last name?
Okay, the last name, B as in boy, R as in red, Z as in zebra, E as in Edward, Z as in zebra, I as in Ida, N as in nation, S as in Sam, K as in
kite.
Kite or kick, I as in Ida, Zbrzeźniew Brzezinski.
Perfect.
And that's from his book, that The Grand Chessboard.
The Grand Chessboard.
But you can't follow his history. He has his history a little mixed up. You know, he makes a lot of fantastic jumps in what he's presenting, you know, and that sort of stuff. So, but the thing about it is that the theme he's pushing, you can see that he thinks that we are the rulers, we are the anointed rulers of the world. Now, if that's not megalomania, I don't know what is. To think that you are superior to everybody else. I mean, wow. We're one species, and we all live and die. One species. We can only eradicate ourselves going this way. That's what we'll do. Eradicate ourselves over some lame stuff like this.
Well, you know, the wealthy, they'll be in safe houses.
Yeah.
If they're not into that. Or they'll take off for another existence in another solar system or planet.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm convinced that they are not so much concerned with those who don't have means, because it does come down to capital and who has
yes.
it. And as Ben Ford said, you got eight now. Eight.
Yeah,
that
I
are controlling.
Think he mentioned a little less. I think he
yeah,
mentioned a little
I,
less.
I,
that, initially,
I know.
That's what it was. I see
it
on
eight.
My email here, and I think he said it came down to even more. But, you know.
It was 62. He said the most recent report in 2016 showed that it's gone down to eight men that control 3.6
right.
billion, as much wealth as half of the planet.
Right.
And it's down from 62 billionaires, and I'm sure within those billionaires there are a couple of trillionaires.
You better believe it. You have some idea of how many Chase banks you see around New York City, and you know, if you can have banks not only in New York City, but you can have them in foreign countries, you've got some outlay of money.
Yes.
Because you have to keep a certain amount of money in the bank for it to be viable. Because there's always exchange going on.
That's correct.
So if you can spread your banks into foreign countries, you got a lot of money. And it's not peanuts.
I agree. There's no
and,
doubt
you know, J.P. Morgan, the same. I tried to explain, like, he's fantastic. And you notice they have a bank together, J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yes.
You see. So they are friends. And they're friends because they are the trillionaires that never find their names or wealth listed in Forbes 500. Never. Never.
That's when you know they're the megas.
Right. And you know why that is, because they're multi-trillionaires. And that's why they can keep their names out.
That's true. You're absolutely correct. You know, I like to have a little common discourse, if we can, about what's happening tomorrow. We're getting ready to go into a new leadership. And, you know, I've heard all the adjectives, you know, from evil to devil and so forth. I just want to reiterate something I said a couple of months ago when he first won the election. And I said we should applaud this. And I want to repeat that. And, you know, I lost a few friends over this, and I think it's It's unfortunate. Well, it's not, it actually is supposed to be that way. That's my spiritual belief. All things are happening as they should. But it's a disappointment, I'll say that, because of that discourse that I'm talking about that needs to take place for any change. And if we can't agree to disagree, there's no opportunity at all. You've taken away the foothold of any type of movement, period. It's not as though I've changed the type of blood that's flowing through my veins or the organs that make me a human being. The brain is still functioning as any other human brain does. For us to have this common discourse, the rationale for me saying that we should be praising that is, and that's why I come back to the opening tune that I'm going to close on this evening, Be a Lion. Be a Lion, because a lion knows it's a lion. You know, I have so many mentors I've been blessed with over the years, and one of my mentors used to tell me, Daryl, watch the feeding lion, and use it as an example. You can watch any animal, and you'll learn about that animal. You'll learn about its instincts. You'll learn that it knows what it is. You see, a lion's not going to go around eating grass, and a cow's not going to go around trying to eat rodents or chipmunks. A thing is what it is. And
that's right.
One of the issues is I believe we need to know what it is that we are. We're human beings. We're supposed to be civilized. And that's what Glenn Ford was saying when he says, well, why would you take out millions of lives on a global scale and call yourself civilized? And so, folks, you know, look at who you are and what you're following before just giving a pass and going in lockstep with what seems to be the way to go. You know, there was a Pied Piper who just led folks right on off of the edge.
That's right.
And if you're looking at, speaking of that dope scenario that Glenn Ford gave, if you're looking at it from that perspective, I was looking at videos earlier. I'll tell you, Barack Obama, I don't care what anyone says, you can't take one thing away. The guy's pretty handsome guy. And I this isn't a homophobic statement when I say I'm not gay. You know, and if you are, that's your business. I don't believe that,
right.
And that's who you are. But that's not who I am, and I'm not homophobic. I'm just saying that to say he's a handsome guy. He's a good-looking guy. He speaks well.
Yes,
and he
I
has
agree.
A personality. He has. Who's going to take away from Barack Obama's personality? But all that aside, as Glenn Ford said, all that emotion, you know, that feel-good stuff aside, at the end of the day, you don't put a president in office because he makes you feel good. But in essence, my concern is that what we've been doing? Because at the end of it, you've got to look back and say, okay, what changed? What changed? The numbers were going down in education way before he came in office. And if you look at the numbers on a more discrete level, you'll find that the numbers have been going up in terms of education. But if you look more discrete level, you'll find that in certain sex, S-E-C, sections, those numbers are plummeting, i.e. the African-American community. If you look at mass incarceration, on a mass level, the numbers may be declining. But on certain sects, i.e. 18 to 35-year-old black males, the number is skyrocketing. So we have to be very discreet in just following lockstep with what we're being told and shown and do our due diligence, especially those of us who are responsible. Those are our mature grassroots folks Anybody over 30, you know, by then it's time to grow up. Because I know, I was a kid's kid. I did as much as I could. And some things I'm really not proud of. But at a certain time, thank God I grew up. And I still got some growing to do. Don't misunderstand me. But I took a leap. And so for those of us who are supposed to be mature, we have a responsibility to not just go in lockstep. And so I come back to my point of, I've lost a lot of connections in terms of what I thought were colleagues, even a few friends. I never had more than about 15 on the planet, I thought. But I've lost some of those because I've spoken against Wu, the Supreme. Barack Obama is not supreme.
Right.
By standard. And I've gone on record many times saying this, and I may lose a few more, quote, so-called friends for saying that.
Yes.
But it is true, and if you look at the numbers, if you look at the numbers, it's not just about us. It's a global situation. And then when you even drill it down into America, that's why I say there are plenty of resources. Go to blackagendareport.com and get the research behind the stories. And there's plenty of stories and plenty of references where listeners, you can find out that maybe what you've been told is not the whole truth. And frankly, I'm not hating the player. I'm hating the game, if there's any hate there. Because that's the society that you talk about so often, Ron, that we're living in.
Yes, yes.
It's just a product of what we live in right now.
That's
folks,
right.
Business has been running our government, I don't even want to say decades. We're beyond decades. We're talking
from inception. From inception.
So
that's what slavery was about. Slavery
before.
Was
we,
about making
where?
Us great.
What did you say, Ron?
I said slavery was making us great. That was the reason for slavery, to make us great at their expense. Did
so,
you hear me?
I heard you wholeheartedly, and if you'd like to elaborate what you mean by that, love it. Not for me, because you and I have had discussions for years, for decades.
Okay, so the thing with slavery, chattel, let me put it that way, chattel slavery meant that you were attached to a particular family, and they would work you and not pay you for your wage. There was no wages for you. You were given your clothes, you were giving your meal, and that was it. And you had to labor. So they took your labor, put it on the market, and got the return for it. So that started the accumulation of wealth, because there was no labor was not being paid for. So therefore, they were extracting all of the wealth out of the labor. And not sharing anything with the person who was providing the labor. So it was all slanted. Until you got into the industrialization, then chattel became irrelevant because it was more efficient to have people, all the citizens, to buy goods, because goods would be manufactured very exponentially. So therefore, you had to spread it out. You couldn't use chattel slavery anymore. It wasn't worth it. You needed the people to buy the goods. Then you were extracting the money. You were extracting the wealth. It was more plentiful to extract the wealth that way. But before all the mechanization, it was necessary to have chattel to make yourself rich. And that's what it was about. I mean, even, you know, there was chattel slavery in Greece and Rome. That's how they got very wealthy, with chattel slavery. So, I mean, and because there was no manufacturing per se. They made things, but it took, you know, much longer to make these things at that time because there was no machinery for it. But machinery was slowly developing, though, all along. Be that clear. But that's what I mean, that chattel pushed aside the laborer and you extracted everything he did and you gave him whatever you wanted to give him or her, whichever. So,
well,
slavery,
you know,
wasn't moved away from because of morality. It was moved away from because it was less efficient. And the machinery was more efficient.
Well, what we have today is a different form of slavery. I mean, we have
situation. Oh, yes, you're right. You hit the right word. Wage slavery now.
That's right.
Because, see, the wage you're getting is only a small percentile of what the owner gets from you, from your labor.
Of the value of your labor, the same thing.
Right. That's where wealth is. Wealth lies in labor.
But Ron, I want to take it to a level that need to really educate those who are coming in, especially on the archives.
Right.
To break it down just a little bit economically. And this isn't because I have an economics degree, which I do have.
Right.
Today it is a different level of sophistication in terms of slavery. Well thought out, and I'm impressed with how well it's been thought out. Just in terms of the brain trust, what has occurred, I despise. How it occurred, I have to say, I admire. Just the idea of the models that were put in place, the think tanks that were put in place to make it happen. Because you see, it's that same modeling and think tank that can reverse that.
Yes.
But the way that this has been put in place, listen closely, listeners, because this is something you're not going to get on mainstream, and this isn't about putting Darrow up. This is just some root for you.
Right.
It's a much more sophisticated level because, see, you had a house nigger then, and you have a house nigger now. You have those who are in corporate America, and I was there. See, I can speak this truth because I know it. Corporate America, 25 years. We're doing very well. I happen to be an exception because while I was there, I remembered the other folk, the little folk, as some would call it, the folk who were doing that retail slave labor. And so I've been fighting this battle for some 30 years now. And there's a number of folks that are out there doing it, but most are not. Because you see, most who are out there in that corporate regime who are bought and sold and making their 50 to 90,000 on the backs of those who are making minimum wage, not being able to care for themselves.
That's right.
They don't care to look back. Many of them are not even aware because they don't want to open their eyes and see. Because then they may have to step out and speak against it.
Yeah.
Because it's just wrong. And the issue is there's not enough. Because if you're making that little 80,000, believe it if you're making it 80,000. If you're in any company that will pay you that much, your CEO is making at least 50 million.
That's right. You got it.
Know the statistics. Minored in it. And so we need more folks that are just speaking this truth. Well, some might say, well, listen, I got a family. I'm going to take my child and I'm going to take her or him and teach them and let them go on in there. And then you're going to perpetuate that. Because guess what, folks? You're a small percentage. You're a little 90, 100, even 50, 40,000 that you're making, and that little group, if you put them all together, you could put them in two arenas. Ain't a whole lot, and I'm talking about huge arenas. Ain't a whole lot, folks. So what about the rest? So imagine as who was the Beatle that made the song Imagine? They got shot in New York City. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, sure. I know who you're talking about, and I can't bring his name.
No, there's hundreds of their listening audience saying, I know. If I was giving away free tickets to their favorite artists, the phones would be busting off the hook right now. But it'll come to us, because, you know, when you think too hard, you can't think at all. Yeah, but we all know who it is. If I name Paul McCartney, maybe his name will come to us, because we know it was him, and then it was Paul and, you know, Peter, almost like the disciples, if you think about it, right? John?
Yeah.
The Beatles had the names of disciples. I didn't even think about that.
Right.
Anyway. Oh, Lord. So anyway, my point that I'm making is, folks, that imagine if all the people just step back. What? This is wrong. I don't want to participate in this. I know I'm making good money, but this isn't right. Minimum wage is, what, $8 in some states? Are you kidding me? Who can survive on that in a year's salary? You cannot survive on that. There isn't a state in the country. There may be one state or one town in a state. So who are we fooling, folks? And why wasn't this made a main agenda? And I know you can say, well, you know, he didn't have the House and the Senate. Yes, he did, when he first came in office. So let's just stop. It's one bird, folks. It's one bird.
That's right.
And I care about every single person in the earshot of my voice, especially those with less. And you can say, well, I feed people at Thanksgiving, and I care in the neighborhood. Okay, that's well and good. If you're doing all that for these folks out here, the few people in your neighborhood, you're doing some good things, but yet you're supporting, and this is something Glenn said. I keep referring back to him because, folks, you need to go back and listen. If you didn't catch the beginning, you need to listen to what Glenn has said, and if you're just coming on, you need to listen to what Glenn and what Mr. Crenshaw is saying. And Glenn and Crenshaw both have said, if you're supporting the head of a regime, even though at lower levels you're helping the poor and those who the regime is abusing, you're abusing the poor as well. Get over it. You can't have it both ways. You cannot support the oppressor and then claim that you're helping those who are being oppressed and that you're doing the right thing, but only take claim to the things that you're doing that are good. Forget the fact that you're supporting the oppressor. Ron, am I making any sense?
Yes.
You can't do both. You can't say, well, I really feed, every day in church we feed the homeless. But yet, if my mayor is an oppressor and I'm just using the mayor, but we got to take it all the way to the top, the head of our establishment, our Senate and our House of Representatives and our president at the administrative branch. If they are doing things and they're killing 500,000 people around the world, and there may be a better way, if you're supporting that, then you can't take claim to doing something at a lower level, because you're wiping out. It's like 2 steps forward and 10 steps backwards.
That's right.
Because on that grand scale, by supporting that oppressor, you're hurting far more than you're helping. This isn't complicated, folks. I just broke it down for you. I could break it down in numbers, and maybe at some point I'll have that opportunity. So I would say, I'm going to open the mic up to you and let you close up, Ron.
I just wanted to say also from the Black Agenda Report that he has that on there, that the Ford Foundation and several other foundations that didn't want to be named are going to come together and invest $100 million into the so-called progressive groups like Black Lives Matter, and I guess the NAACP, and a lot of the socialists, I'll say, the socialist groupings, $100 million to spread out among them to keep them viable. But that means something. If you're going to be donating money to certain groups, you also means that you are going to be able to manipulate those groups because you can give and take. So if you do the wrong thing, it's taken back. So I just wanted to share that with you. I got that from a Black Agenda report.
Well, you know, Black Lives Matter, I appreciate a lot of what they have talked about in terms of raising the social consciousness.
Sure, I do too.
Well, I have an issue with some of what they did because I thought of the candidates that were mainstream candidates. I thought Bernie was probably most viable. But of course, we that doesn't include the alternative, and I don't like that word, but lack of a better word, I'll use it, alternative candidates, the Green Party, for example. And just as one example, and you can name several more. I know that for a fact, Ron.
Well, they can't
but of
go
the main...
any further. The Green Party can't go any further. It's not going to be a thing where a Green Party can win a candidate. It's not that type of thing. That's just there to make people feel like there's some kind of democracy. It's not a democracy. It can't be a democracy. It's an oligarchy at best. And oligarchies are dictatorships, of the very rich. You can't go any further. You can't have an empire if you're going to be a democracy. You can't have an empire because the fact is that when somebody somewhere in the world starts to compete with you and you feel like they may be taking more than they should be taking, you've got to pounce on them and you can't give the public what the real reason is. You have to give a lie so that you can do what you have to do to stay in your position. That's what we've had.
And all of the wars
coming forward, that's what we've had.
You're so correct. Ron, we've run out of time.
Yeah,
I do for your candidness, your knowledge that you're sharing, the power.
Yeah.
I would
Thank
leave
you.
Everyone as we go into this inaugural weekend under a new leadership. Embrace it, folks. Embrace it. The Klan is in the White House. Maybe
right.
now... We'll step up and say, let's take some real action. Because, see, the Klan was in the White House the last 8 years, whether you want to know it or not, just at a whole different level. And we were taking the Kool-Aid, and how far did we get? Our children were murdered in the streets for the last 3 years. Well, folks, now that we have a viable target, this is a good thing. And hopefully it'll stir our consciousness to some positivity. I ask that you all know about Progressive News Weekly on Thursday evening, 6:30 to 7:30. Ron, you know we want you back next month, especially for Black History Month. And
all right, thank you.
I wish nothing but peace and blessings to all of our listeners. And understand, because it's a different perspective, doesn't mean it's just a wrong or bad or negative or regressive perspective. We must have common discourse, and we must know who we are. We must, after finding who we are, live who we are. Let's not be an elephant and walk like a flea.
Let's not be a lion and walk like a kitten. Be the lion that you are and walk with the authority that's given to you. God bless you until we meet again.
Blessing.
Thanks to Ronald Crenshaw, Hand 2, Glenn Ford, for riveting evening with Progressive News Weekly. Be a lion.
But not even lightning will be frightening my lion, and with no fear inside, no need to run, no on courage, you must.